Chapter 10. A Saying in the Borderlands. For a moment, Rand wished for the days when he could have strolled the palace corridors alone. This morning he was accompanied by Sulin and 20 maidens, by Bale, clan chief of the Goshin Aiel, with half a dozen Sovin Nai, knife hands, from the Jirad Goshin, for Bale's honor, and by Bashir, with as many of his hawk-nosed Saldaeans. They crowded the broad, tapestry-hung hallway, the cotton-sore-clad Fardarais Mai and Sovin Nai staring through servants who bowed or curtsied hastily and got out of the way, and the younger Saldaeans swaggering in their short coats and their baggy breeches tucked into their boots. It was hot even here in the shaded passage, and dust motes danced in the air. Some of the servants wore the red-and-white livery they had worn when Morghese ruled, but most were new, garbed in whatever they had on when they came applying for the job. A motley collection of farmers' and tradesmen's woolens, mainly dark and plain, but running the range of colors, with here and there splashes of embroidery or bits of lace. Rand made a mental note to have Mistress Harfor, the first maid, find livery enough to go around, so the newcomers would not feel required to work in their best clothes. Palace livery was certainly finer than anything country folk had, except for perhaps feast days. The servants numbered fewer than in Morghese's day, and a good many of the red-and-white attired men and women were gray and stooped, out of the pensioners' quarters. Instead of fleeing when so many others did, they had quit their retirement rather than see the palace become run down. Another mental note, have Mistress Harfor. First maid was an unprepossessing title, but Rena Harfor ran the royal palace day to day. Find enough servants so these oldsters could enjoy their pensions. Were the pensions still being paid with Morghese dead? He should have thought of that before. Alwyn Norrie, the chief clerk, would know. It was like being beaten to death with feathers. Everything reminded him of something else to be done. The ways. That was no feather. He had the waygate here in Camelin under guard, and those near Tyr and Cairhien. But he could not even be sure how many more there were. Yes, he would have traded all the bows and curtsies, all the honor guards, all the questions and burdens, all the people whose needs had to be met, for the days when he had to worry about providing a coat for himself. Of course, in those days he would not have been allowed to stroll these corridors at all, certainly not without a different sort of guard, one to make sure he did not slip a silver and gold chalice from its niche in the wall, or an ivory carving from a lapis-inlaid table. At least Luz Theron's voice was not muttering at him this morning. At least he seemed to be getting the way of the mental trick Taim had shown him. Sweat trickled down Bashir's face, but the heat hardly touched Rand. He wore his silver-embroidered coat of gray silk buttoned to the neck, and if he felt a little warm, he did not sweat a drop. Taim assured him that in time he would not even feel heat or cold great enough to disable another man. It was a matter of distancing himself, of concentrating inward, a little like the way he prepared to embrace Sidene. Strange that it should be so close to the power, yet have nothing to do with it at all. Did Aes Sedai do the same? He had never seen one sweat. Had he? Abruptly he laughed out loud, wondering whether Aes Sedai ever sweated. Maybe he was not mad yet, but he could pass fair for a wool-headed fellow. "Did I say something funny?" Bashir asked dryly, knuckling his mustaches. Some of the maidens looked at him expectantly. They were making an effort to understand wetlander humor. How Bashir kept his equanimity, Rand did not know. A rumor had reached the palace that very morning of fighting in the borderlands between borderlanders. Travelers' tales sprang up like weeds after rain, but this had come from the north, apparently with merchants who had been at least as far as Tarvalen. Nothing in it said where or who exactly. Saldaea was as likely as anywhere else, and Bashir had had no word from there since he left months ago. Yet he might have heard that the price of turnips had risen for all the effect the rumor had had on him. Of course, Rand knew nothing of what was going on in the Two Rivers either, unless vague mutters of an uprising somewhere in the west touched his home. In these days that could be anything or nothing. But it was not the same for him. He had abandoned the two rivers. Aes Sedai had spies everywhere, and he would not wager a copper that the Forsaken did not as well. The Dragon Reborn had no interest in the fly-speck village where Randall Thor had grown up. He was far beyond that. If he was not, then Emmons Field was a hostage to use against him. Still, he would not split hairs with himself. Abandonment was abandonment. "If I could find a way to escape my destiny, do I deserve to?" That was his own thought, not Luz Theron's. Shifting shoulders that suddenly seemed to ache dully, he kept his voice light. "Forgive me, Bashir. Something odd just occurred to me. But I have been listening. You were saying Camlann is filling up? For every man who ran away because he was afraid of the false dragon, two have come because I'm not and he isn't? You see?" Bashir grunted, which might have meant anything.
"How many have come for other reasons, Randall Thor?"
Bale was the tallest man Rand had ever seen, a good hand taller than Rand himself. He made an odd contrast with Bashir, who stood shorter than any of the maidens except Anila. Gray streaked thickly through Bale's dark reddish hair, but his face was lean and hard, his blue eyes sharp.
"You have enemies enough for 100 men. Mark me, they will try to strike at you again. There could even be shadow runners among them."
"Even if there are no dark friends," Bashir put in, "trouble brews in the city like tea left on the boil. A number of people have been severely beaten, evidently for doubting you're the Dragon Reborn, and one poor fellow was hauled from a tavern into a barn and hanged from the rafters for laughing at your miracles."
"My miracles?" Rand said incredulously. A wrinkled, white-haired serving man, in a too-large coat of livery, with a large vase in his hands, trying to bow and step out of the way at the same time, tripped on his heel and fell backward. The pale green vase, paper-thin seafolk porcelain, flew over his head and went tumbling end over end across the dark red floor tiles, spinning and bouncing until it came to rest, upright, 30 or so paces down the hall. The old man scrambled to his feet with surprising spryness and ran to snatch up the vase, running his hands over it and exclaiming in disbelief as much as relief when he found not a chip or a crack. Other servants stared with just as much incredulity, before abruptly coming to themselves and hurrying on about their tasks. They avoided looking at Rand so hard that several forgot to bow or curtsy. Bashir and Bale exchanged looks, and Bashir blew out his thick mustaches.
"Strange occurrences, then," he said. "Every day there's another story about a child falling headfirst onto paving stones from a window 40 feet up, without so much as a single bruise, or a grandmother getting in the way of 2 dozen runaway horses, only somehow they don't even buffet her, much less knock her down and trample her. Some fellow threw 5 crowns 22 times straight at dice the other day, and they laid that at your feet, too. Luckily for him."
"It is said," Bale added, "that yesterday a basket of roof tiles fell from a roof and landed in the street unbroken in the shape of the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai."
He glanced at the open-mouthed, white-haired servant, clutching the vase to his chest as they passed.
"I do not doubt that it did."
Rand exhaled slowly. They did not mention the other sort, of course. The man who stumbled on a step and was hanged when his kerchief caught on the door latch, the loose slate ripped from a roof by a high wind that sailed through an open window, and a doorway to kill a woman sitting at table with her family. The sort of thing that did happen, but rarely. Only such things were not rare around him. For good or ill, for ill as often as good, he twisted chance merely by being within a few miles. No, if the dragons disappeared from his arms and the branded herons from his palms, he was still marked. There was a saying in the borderlands, "Duty is heavier than a mountain, death lighter than a feather." Once you had that mountain firmly on your shoulders, there was no way to put it down. There was no one else to carry it anyway, and no use whining about it. He made his voice brisk. "Have you found the men who did the hanging?" Bashir shook his head. "Then find them and arrest them for murder. I want a stop put to this. Doubting me isn't a crime." Rumor said the Prophet had made it one, but there was nothing he could do about that yet. He did not even know where Massima was, beyond somewhere in Gildan or Amadisia. If he had not gone elsewhere meantime. Yet another note chalked up in his head. He had to find the man and rein him somehow.
"No matter how far it goes," Bashir said, "there are whispers you're a false dragon who killed Morghese with Aes Sedai help. The people are supposed to rise up against you and avenge their queen. There may be more than one someone. It isn't clear."
Rand's face hardened. The first part he could live with. He had to. There were too many variations to stamp out however many times he denied it. But he would not tolerate incitement to rebellion. Andar would be one land he did not split apart in war. He would give Elaine a land as unblemished as it had come to him. If he ever found her, he would. "Find who began it," he said harshly, "and toss them in prison." Light, how to find who started a whisper. If they seek pardon, they can ask Elaine for it. A young serving woman in a rough brown dress, dusting a blue spun-glass bowl, caught sight of his face, and the bowl dropped from her suddenly shaking hands and shattered. He did not always alter chance. "Is there any good news? I could do with some." The young woman bent unsteadily to gather up the shards of the bowl, but Sulin glanced at her, just glanced, and she sprang back, flattening herself wide-eyed against a tapestry showing a leopard hunt. Rand did not understand it, but some women seemed more frightened of the maidens than they did of Aiel men. The young woman looked at Bale as if hoping he would protect her. He did not appear to see her at all.
"That depends on how you define good news," Bashir shrugged. "I've learned that Elorian of House Tremaine and Pelivar of House Curlan entered the city 3 days ago. Sneaked in, you might say. And neither has come near the inner city that I've heard. Talk in the streets is Dylan of House Terravin in the country nearby. None of them has responded to your invitations. I've heard nothing to connect any of them to the whispers."
He glanced at Bale, who gave a slight shake of his head.
"We hear less than you, Davram Bashir. These people speak more freely around Wetlanders."
It was good news, in any case. Those were people Rand needed. If they believed him a false dragon, he could find a way around that. If they believed he had killed Morghese, well, so much the better if they remained loyal to her memory and her blood. "Send them fresh invitations to visit me. Include Dylan's name. They may know where she is."
"If I send such an invitation," Bashir said doubtfully, "it may do no more than remind them there's a Saldaean army in Andor."
Rand hesitated, then nodded, suddenly grinning.
"Ask the Lady Aramilla to carry it. I don't doubt she'll leap at the chance to show them how close she is to me.
But you write it out."
Moraine's lessons in playing the game of houses were coming in useful once more.
"I do not know whether it is good news or bad," Bale said, "but the Red Shields tell me two Aes Sedai have taken rooms at an inn in the new city."
The Red Shields had been helping Bashir's men police Camelin, and were now taking it over alone. Bale grinned slightly at the chagrin on Bashir's face.
"We hear less, Davram Bashir, but perhaps sometimes we see more."
"Is one of them our friend who likes cats?" Rand asked. The stories of an Aes Sedai in the city persisted. Sometimes there were two or three, or a whole party. The closest Bashir or Bale had come to anything at all, though, were a few stories of an Aes Sedai who healed dogs and cats, but always the next street over, told by someone who had been told by someone who had heard it in a tavern or in the market. Bale shook his head.
"I do not think so.
The Red Shield said these two seemed to have arrived in the night. Bashir looked interested. He seldom let an opportunity pass to repeat that Rand needed Aes Sedai, but Bail was frowning slightly, so slightly it would not have been noticeable on anyone but an Aiel. Aiel were careful in their dealings with Aes Sedai, even reluctant. Those few words contained plenty for Rand to think on, and every path came back to himself. Two Aes Sedai had to have a reason to come into Camelon when their sisters were avoiding the city since he appeared there. The most likely reason was something to do with him. In the best of times, few people journeyed by night, and these were not the best of times. Aes Sedai arriving in the dark might be trying to avoid notice, and the most likely notice for them to avoid was his. On the other hand, they might just be going somewhere urgently, which could spell a mission for the tower. The truth of it was, he could not think what might be more important to the tower right now than himself. Or they might be on their way to join the Aes Sedai that Egwene insisted were going to support him. Whatever it was, he wanted to know. The light alone knew what the Aes Sedai were up to, the tower or Elaine's hidden lot, but he had to find out. There were too many of them, and they could be too dangerous for him not to. How would the tower react when Elida learned of his amnesty? How would any Aes Sedai? Had they heard yet? As they approached the doors at the end of the corridor, he opened his mouth to tell Bail to ask one of the Aes Sedai to come to the palace. He could handle two Aes Sedai if it came to that, so long as they did not catch him by surprise, but there was no point taking chances until he knew who they were and what they were about.
"Pride fills me. I am sick with the pride that destroyed me."
Rand missed a step. That was the first time today that Luce Theron's voice had spoken inside his head, and too much like a comment on his thoughts of Aes Sedai for comfort. But it was not what made him swallow what he had been going to say and stop dead. Because of the heat, the doors stood open, giving out into one of the palace gardens. The flowers were gone, and some of the rose and white star bushes looked wilted. But the shade trees still stood, if with few leaves, around the white marble fountain that splashed in the garden's heart. A woman in bulky brown wool skirts and a loose white algoda blouse stood beside the fountain, a gray shawl looped over her arms, staring in wonder, as she often did, at water with no use except to be looked at. Rand's eyes drank in the lines of Avienda's face, the waves of reddish hair falling to her shoulders from the folded gray scarf fastened around her temples. Light, but she was beautiful. Studying the spray of water, she had not seen him yet. Did he love her? He did not know. She was all tangled in his head and his dreams with Elaine and even Min. What he did know was that he was dangerous. He had nothing to offer any woman except pain.
"Ilyena,"
Luce Theron wept.
"I killed her. The light consumed me forever."
"A pair of Aes Sedai showing up like that might be important," Rand said quietly. "I think I should visit this inn and see why they're here." Almost everyone stopped when he did, but Inila and Jelani exchanged glances and kept on right past him toward the garden. He raised his voice a fraction and hardened it considerably more. "The maidens here will come with me. Anyone who wants to put on a dress and discuss matchmaking can stay behind." Inila and Jelani stiffened and spun to face him, indignation lighting their eyes. A good thing Samara was not in today's guard. She might have gone on anyway. Sulin's fingers flashed in maiden hand talk, and whatever she had to say, it quenched indignation and set embarrassed flames in the two maidens' cheeks instead. The Aiel had all sorts of hand signals for when silence was best. Every clan had its private set, and every society as well, besides which there were those all the Aiel knew. But only the maidens had made a language of them. Rand did not wait for Sulin to finish before turning away from the garden. These Aes Sedai might leave Camelon as quickly as they had come. He glanced over his shoulder. Avienda was still staring at the water. She had not seen him. He quickened his step. "Bashir, would you send one of your men to have horses readied? At the south stable gate." The main gates of the palace opened onto the Queen's Plaza, which would be full of people hoping for a glimpse of him. It would have taken half an hour to make a way through, if he was lucky. Bashir motioned, and one of the younger Saldaeans loped ahead in that rolling stride of a man more used to a saddle.
"A man must know when to retreat from a woman," Bashir said to the heir, "but a wise man knows that sometimes he must stand and face her."
"Young men," Bale said indulgently. "A young man chases shadows and runs from moonlight, and in the end he stabs himself in the foot with his own spear."
Some of the other Aiel chuckled, maidens and knife-hands alike. The older ones did. Irritated, Rand looked over his shoulder again. "Neither of you would look well in a dress." Surprisingly, the maidens and knife-hands laughed again, more loudly. Maybe he was getting a grip on Aiel humor. It was as he expected when he rode out of the south stable gate into one of the inner city's curving streets. Jadon's hooves rang out on the paving stones as the stallion frisked. The Dapple seldom got out of the stable of late. There were plenty of people in the street, but nowhere near the numbers to be expected on the other side of the palace, and all going about their own business. Even so, fingers pointed and people leaned close to one another, murmuring. Some might have recognized Bashir. Unlike Rand, he had been out and about in the city often. But anybody emerging from the palace, especially with an escort of trotting Aiel, had to be important. The murmurs and pointing fingers followed. Despite the stares, Rand tried to enjoy the beauties of the Ogier-built inner city. The few occasions he found to just enjoy anything were precious. Streets curved out from the shining white royal palace, flowing along the contours of the hills like a part of the land. Everywhere stood slender towers covered in colored tiles, or domes of gold or purple or white sparkling in the sunlight. Here a line of sight had been left clear to give a view of tree-filled park. There a rise threw the eyes across the city to the rolling plains and forests beyond the tall silver-streaked white wall that enclosed all of Camelon. The inner city had been laid out to delight and soothe the eye. According to the Ogier, only Tarvalin itself and storied Menetherin had ever surpassed it, and many humans, Andorans foremost among them, believe that Camelon matched either. The pure white walls of the inner city marked the beginning of the surrounding new city with its own domes and spires, some trying to match the height of those in the inner city on its higher hills. Here the narrower streets were packed full of humanity, and even the broad boulevards, split down the middle by tree-lined expanses, were filled with people and ox carts and horse-drawn wagons, folk on horseback and in carriages and sedan chairs. A buzz hung in the air as from a huge hive of bees. Passage was slower here, though the crowds gave way. They did not know who he was, any more than did those in the inner city, but no one wanted to get in the way of striding Aiel. It simply took time with so many people. And there was every sort of person. Farmers in rough woolens and merchants in coats or dresses of finer cut. Craftsmen hurrying about their trades and hawkers crying their wares from trays and pushcarts. Everything from pins and ribbons to fruit and fireworks. The last two equally dear now. A gleeman in his patched-covered cloak rubbed shoulders with three Aiel inspecting the blades displayed on tables before a cutler's workshop. Two lean fellows with their dark hair in braids and swords on their backs, hunters for the horn, Rand expected, stood chatting with a number of Saldaeans as they listened to a woman playing the flute and a man the tambour on a street corner. Karienin, shorter and paler, stood out among the Andorans, and so did the darker Tyrans, but Rand saw Mirandians in long coats and Altarans in elaborate vests, fork-bearded Kandori, even a pair of Domani with long thin mustaches and earrings. Another sort of people stood out, too, those who wandered about in rumpled coats and wrinkled dresses, often dusty and always blinking and staring, plainly with nowhere to go and no idea of what to do next. That sort had gone as far as they could go toward what they sought. Him. The Dragon Reborn. What he was to do with them he had no notion, yet they were his responsibility, one way or another. no matter that he had not asked them to throw over their lives, had not wanted them to abandon everything. They had, because of him. And if they learned who he was, they might well overwhelm the Aiel and tear him apart in their eagerness just to touch him. He touched the fat little man Angriol in his coat pocket. A fine thing, if it came to him using the one power to protect himself against people who had given up everything because of him. That was why he seldom ventured into the city. One reason, anyway. There was just too much to be done to go for an idle ride. The inn Bale led him to, toward the western end of the city, was called Culain's Hound. 3 stories of stone with a red tile roof. On the twisting side street, the passing throng backed up both ways, narrowing to crowd around Rand's party when it stopped. Rand touched the Angriol again. 2 Aes Sedai, he should be able to handle them without resorting to that, before dismounting and going in. Not before 3 maidens and a pair of knife hands, of course, all on their toes, and a hair from veiling. He could have taught a cat to sing first. Leaving 2 Saldaeans with the horses, Bashir and the others strode in at his heels, along with Bale, the rest of the Aiel following, except for those who had taken up guard outside. What they found was not what Rand expected. The common room could have changed places with any of 100 or more in Camelin. Great barrels of ale and wine lining one plain plastered wall, topped with smaller casks of brandy, and a gray-striped cat sprawled on top of all, a pair of stone fireplaces, the hearths swept bare, and 3 or 4 aproned serving women moving among tables and benches scattered around a bare wooden floor beneath a beamed ceiling. The innkeeper, a round-faced man with 3 chins, a white apron straining around his bulk, trotted up washing his hands and eyeing the Aiel only a touch nervously. Camelin had learned they were not going to pillage and burn everything in sight, convincing the Aiel that Andor was not a conquered land and they could not take the 5th, had been a harder proposition. But that was not to say innkeepers were used to having 2 dozen appear in their common rooms at once. The innkeeper concentrated on Rand and Bashir, mainly on Bashir. Both men were clearly men of substance by their clothes, but Bashir was the elder by a good many years, and thus likely to be the more important.
"Welcome, my lord, my lords. What may I offer you? I have wines from Murundi, as well as Andorin, brandy from—"
Rand ignored the man. What was not like 100 other common rooms was the patrons. At this hour he would have expected 1 or 2 men, perhaps, but there were none. Instead, most of the tables were filled with plainly dressed young women, girls, really, for the most part, who twisted around on their benches, teacups in hand, to gawk at the new arrivals. More than one gasped at Bale's height. Not all of them stared at the Aiel, though, and it was the near dozen who gaped at him that made Rand's eyes widen. He knew them. Not all well, but he did know them. One in particular seized his attention.
"Bode?" he said in disbelief.
That big-eyed girl staring at him, when had she gotten old enough to put her hair in a braid, was Bodwin Cawthon, Matt's sister. And there was plump Hilda Baron sitting next to skinny Geraldine Alcar, and pretty Marisa Ahan, with her hands clapped to her cheeks the way she always did when surprised, and buxom Emery Lewin, and Elise Marwin, and Daria Candwin, and— they were from Emmons Field, or close by. Darting a look over the rest of the tables, he realized the others must be 2 Rivers girls, too. Most of them, anyway. He saw a Domani face, and 1 or 2 more that might be from off, but every dress could have been seen any day on the green in Emmons Field.
"What under the light are you doing here?"
"We are on our way to Tarvalen,"
Bode managed, despite gaping. The only thing about her that looked at all like Matt was a mischievous something around the eyes. Her astonishment at seeing him vanished quickly in a broad smile of wonder and delight.
"To become Aes Sedai, like Egwene and Nynaeve."
"We could ask the same of you,"
willowy Laureen Aiellen put in, arranging her thick braid over her shoulder with studied casualness. the oldest of the Emmonsfield girls, a good 3 years younger than him, but the only one besides Bode to have her hair braided. She had always had a good opinion of herself. She was pretty enough for all the boys to have confirmed it for her.
"Lord Perrin hardly said two words about you except to say you were off having adventures, and wearing fine coats, which I see you are." "Is Matt well?" Bode asked, suddenly anxious. "Is he with you? Mother worries about him so, he wouldn't even remember to put on clean stockings if someone didn't tell him."
"No," Rand said slowly, "he's not here. But he is well."
"We hardly expected to find you in Camelin," Jancy Torfin piped up in her high voice.
She could not be more than 14. She was the youngest, at least among the Emmonsfielders.
"Verin Sedai and Alana Sedai will be pleased, I'll wager. They're always asking what we know about you."
So those were the two Aes Sedai. He knew Verin, a brown sister, more than slightly. He did not know what to think about her being here, though. That was hardly most important anyway. These girls were from home. "Everything is all right in the Two Rivers, then? In Emmonsfield? Perrin got there all right, it seems. Wait. Lord Perrin?" That opened the sluice gate. The rest of the Two Rivers girls were more interested in studying the Aiel with sidelong peaks, especially Bale, and a few spared glances for the Saldaeans, but the Emmonsfield girls crowded around Rand, all trying to tell him everything at once, all jumbled up and wrong way round, interspersed with questions about himself and Matt, about Egwene and Nynaeve, most of which he could not have answered in under an hour had they given him a chance. Trollocs had invaded the Two Rivers, but Lord Perrin drove them off. They went on so about the great battle, everyone talking at the same time, that it was hard to pick out any details except that there had been one. Everybody fought, of course, but it had been Lord Perrin who saved everybody. Always Lord Perrin. Any time he said just Perrin, they corrected him in the perfunctory way they might someone who said horse when he should have said sawhorse. Even with the news that the Trollocs were beaten, Rand's chest tightened. He had abandoned them to this. If he had gone, there might not have been such a long list of the dead, so many names that he knew. But if he had gone, he would not have the Aiel behind him. Cairhien would not be his, as much as it was, and Ravin would likely be sending a united Andor against him and the Two Rivers. There was a price to be paid for any decision he made. There was a price for who he was. Other people paid it. He had to keep reminding himself that it was a far smaller price than they would pay without him. The reminder did not help much, though. Taking his expression for dismay at the listing of Two Rivers dead, the girls hastened on to happier things. It seemed Perrin had married Fael, too. Rand wished him happiness in that and wondered how long any happiness they found could last. The girls thought it romantic and wonderful, and only seemed to regret that there had been no time for the usual wedding parties. They were quite approving of Fael, quite admiring, and a touch envious, even Loreen. There had been white cloaks, too, and with them, Padan Fain, the old peddler, who used to come to Emmonsfield every spring. The girls seemed unsure whether the white cloaks had been friends or enemies, but to Rand, Fain made the difference, if there was any real doubt. Fain was a dark friend, maybe worse than a dark friend, who would do anything to harm Rand and Matt and Perrin, especially Rand. Maybe the worst news they had to tell him was that no one knew whether Fain was dead. In any case, the White Cloaks were gone, the Trollocs were gone, and refugees were flooding in across the mountains of mist, bringing all sorts of new things, from customs to trades, plants and seeds to clothes. One of the other girls was a Damani, and there were two Terrabonners and three from Almuth Plain.
"Loreen bought a Damani dress," little Jancy laughed, cutting her eyes. "But her mother made her take it back to the seamstress."
Loreen raised her hand, then thought better of it, and simply rearranged her braid with a sniff. Jancy giggled.
"Who cares about dresses?" Susa Alcine exclaimed. "Rand doesn't care about dresses."
A slight fluttery girl, Susa had always been excitable,
and right now she was bouncing on her toes. Alana Sedai and Varen Sedai tested everybody. Well, almost everybody. Celia Cole wanted to be tested, too, Marse Eldon, a stocky girl, put in. Rand did not much remember her, except that she had always had her nose in a book, even walking in the street. She insisted. She passed, but they told her she was too old to be a novice. Sousa went right on over, Marse. And we all passed. We've been traveling all day and practically all night since Whitebridge, Bode put in. It is so good to stay in one place a little while. Have you seen Whitebridge, Rand? Chansey said on top of Bode. The Whitebridge itself? And we're going to Tar Valon to become Aes Sedai, Sousa finished with a glare that took in Bode, Mars, and Chansey. In Tar Valon.
We will not be going to Tar Valon just yet. The voice from the door to the street spun the girl's attention from Rand, but the two Aes Sedai just coming in waved aside their questions offhandedly. The Aes Sedai's regard was all for Rand. They were disparate women, despite the common link of their faces. Either could have been any age at all, but Varen was short and plump, square-faced, with a touch of gray in her hair, while the other, who must be Alana, was dark and slender, a beautiful vulpine woman with waves of black hair and a light in her eyes that spoke of a temper, and with a slight redness around them, as if she had been crying, though Rand could hardly believe an Aes Sedai weeping. Her riding dress was gray silk, slashed with green, and looked as if she had just donned it, while Varen's pale brown appeared slightly rumpled. If Varen paid little heed to her clothes, though, her dark eyes were sharp enough. They latched onto Rand as tightly as muscles on a rock. Two men in dull green coats followed them into the common room, one stocky and gray-haired, the other a tall, dark whip of a man, but each had a sword on his hip, and the fluid way they moved would have named them warders even without the Aes Sedai. They ignored Rand entirely, instead watching the Aiel and Saldaeans with a stillness that spoke of sudden movement in check. For their part, the Aiel did not move exactly, but there was an air of veils going up about them, maidens and knife hands alike, and the young Saldaeans' fingers suddenly hovered near sword hilts. Only Bael and Bashir appeared truly at ease. The girls noticed nothing except the Aes Sedai, but the fat innkeeper sensed the mood and began wringing his hands, no doubt seeing his common room destroyed, if not his whole inn. "There will be no trouble," Rand said loudly and levelly, for the innkeeper, for the Aiel. For everyone, he hoped. "No trouble unless you start it, Varen." Several of the girls goggled at him, speaking so to an Aes Sedai, and Loreen sniffed loudly. Varen studied him with bird-like eyes.
"Who are we to start trouble near you?
You have come far since I saw you last." For some reason, he did not want to talk about that. "If you've decided not to go to Tar Valon, then you must have heard the tower is broken." That caused a startled buzz among the girls. They certainly had not heard. The Aes Sedai gave no reaction at all. "Do you know where those who oppose Elida are?"
"There are things we should discuss in private," Elana said calmly. "Master Dillam, we will need your private dining room."
The innkeeper nearly fell over himself, assuring her that it was at her disposal. Varen started toward a side door.
"This way, Rand."
Elana looked at him, raising a questioning eyebrow. Rand held in a wry grin. They had just walked in and taken charge, but it seemed that Aes Sedai did that as naturally as breathing. The Two Rivers girls stared at him with varying degrees of commiseration. Doubtless they expected the Aes Sedai to skin him if he did not speak right and sit straight. Perhaps Varen and Alana did, too. With a smooth bow, he motioned for Alana to precede him. So he had come a long way, Addie. They had no idea how far. Alana acknowledged his bow with a nod, gathered her skirts, and glided after Varen. But trouble followed immediately. The two warders made as if to trail the Aes Sedai, and before they had taken a full step, a pair of cold-eyed Sovin Nai moved to block them, while Sulin's fingers flickered in hand-talk, sending a Nyla and a blocky maiden named Dagendra toward the door the Aes Sedai were approaching. The Saldaeans looked to Bashir, who gestured for them to stay, but then he himself looked a question at Rand. Alana made a vexed sound.
"We will speak with him alone, Ivan."
The slender warder frowned, then nodded slowly. Varen glanced back, looking slightly startled, as though pulled from deep thought.
"What? Oh, yes, of course. Tomas, stay here, please."
The gray-haired warder appeared doubtful, and he gave Rand a hard look before lounging back against the wall beside the door to the street. At least he was lounging if a tripwire could be said to be lounging. Only then did the knife hands relax, as much as Aiel ever relaxed. "I want to talk to them alone," Rand said, looking straight at Sulin. For a moment he thought she meant to dispute him. Her jaw firmed stubbornly. Finally, hand talk passed between her, Anila, and Agendra, and they moved back, looking at him and shaking their heads in disapproval. Suolin's fingers moved again, and all the maidens laughed. He wished there was some way to learn hand talk. Suolin had been scandalized when he asked. Confused looks passed among the Two Rivers girls as Rand started after the Aes Sedai, and he closed the door behind them on a rising buzz. It was a small room, but with polished chairs instead of benches and pewter candlesticks on both the polished table and the vine-carved mantel above the fireplace. The two windows were shut, yet no one made a move to open one. He wondered if either Aes Sedai had noticed that the heat touched him no more than it did them. "Will you be taking them to the rebels?" he asked immediately. Frowning, Varen smoothed her skirts.
"You know considerably more about that than we do. We did not hear of events in the tower until Whitebridge."
Alana's tone was cool, but there was heat in the eyes she kept fixed on him.
"What do you know of rebels?"
A world of distaste entered her voice with that word. So they had heard the rumors first in Whitebridge and made haste here, keeping everything from the girls. And by the reactions of Bode and the others, the decision not to go to Tarvalen was fresh. Seemingly they had found confirmation this morning. "I don't suppose you'll tell me who your spy in Camelon is." They merely looked at him, Varen tilting her head to study him. Strange how Aes Sedai gazes had been so unsettling once, so serene whatever was happening, so knowing. Having an Aes Sedai stare at him, or even two, no longer made his stomach turn uneasily.
"Pride," Luce Theron laughed madly, and Rand suppressed a grimace.
"I've been told rebels exist. You haven't denied knowing where they are. I mean no harm to them. Far from it. I have reason to believe they might support me." He kept back his main reason for wanting to know. Perhaps Bashir was right. Perhaps he did need Aes Sedai backing, but mainly he wanted to know because he had been told Elaine was with them. He needed her to gain Andor peacefully. That was his only motive in seeking her, the only one. He was as dangerous to her as to Avienda.
"For the love of the light, if you know, tell me."
"If we did know," Alana replied, "we would have no right to tell anyone. Should they decide to support you, you may be certain they will seek you out."
"In their time," Varen said, "not yours."
He smiled grimly. He should have expected as much, or as little. Moraine's advice was in the front of his head. Trust no woman who wore the shawl on the day she died.
"Is Matt with you?"
Alana asked, as if that were the last thing on her mind, really. "If I knew where he was, why should I tell you?
Turn and turn about."
They did not seem to think that was funny.
"It is foolish to treat us as enemies," Alana murmured, moving toward him. "You look tired. Are you getting enough rest?"
He stepped back from her raised hand and she stopped.
"Like you, Rand, I mean no harm. Nothing I do here will cause you any injury."
Since she had said it straight out, it must be so. He nodded, and she raised her hand to his head. His skin tingled faintly as she embraced Sidar, and a familiar warm ripple passed through him, the feel of her checking his health. Ilana nodded in satisfaction, and suddenly the warmth was heat, one great flash of it, as if he stood for a heartbeat in the middle of a roaring furnace. Even after it passed, he felt odd, aware of himself as he never had been before, aware of Ilana. He swayed, head light, muscles watery. An echo of confusion and unease rang from Luz Theron.
"What did you do?"
he demanded. In a fury, he seized Sidar. The strength of it helped hold him upright.
"What did you do?"
Something beat at the flow between him and the true source. They were trying to shield him. Weaving his own shields, he slammed them into place. He truly had gone far and learned much since Varen last saw him. Varen staggered, putting a hand on the table for support, and Ilana grunted as if he had punched her.
"What did you do?"
Even deep in the cold, emotionless void as he was, his voice grated.
"Tell me!" "I made no promises not to hurt you. If you don't tell me..."
"She bonded you,"
Varen said quickly, but if her serenity had been ruffled, it cloaked her again in an instant.
"She bonded you as one of her warders, that is all."
Ilana recovered her composure even faster. Shielded, she faced him calmly, arms folded, a hint of contentment about her eyes.
Contentment. "I said I would not injure you, and I have done exactly the opposite of injury."
Drawing deep, slow breaths, Rand tried to settle himself. He had walked into it like a puppy. Rage crawled across the outside of the void. Calm. He must be calm. One of her warders. She was a green then. Not that that made any difference. He knew little of warders, certainly not how to break the bond, or if it could be broken. All Rand felt from Luz Theron was a sense of stunned shock. Not for the first time, Rand wished Lan had not gone galloping away after Moraine died.
"You said you won't be going to Tar Valon.
In that case, since you don't seem to know whether you know where the rebels are, you can remain here in Camelon." Ilana opened her mouth, but he rode over her.
"Be grateful if I decide not to tie off those shields and leave you like that."
That got their attention. Varen's mouth tightened, and Ilana's eyes could have done for that furnace he had felt.
"You will stay away from me, though, both of you. Unless I send for you, the inner city is barred to you. Try to break that, and I will leave you shielded, and in a cell besides. Do we understand one another?"
"Perfectly."
Despite her eyes, Ilana's voice was ice. Varen merely nodded. Flinging open the door, Rand stopped. He had forgotten the Two Rivers girls. Some were talking to the maidens, some were just studying them and whispering over their tea. Bode and a handful of the Emmons Fielders were questioning Bashir, who had a pewter mug in his fist and one foot up on a bench. They looked half entertained, half aghast. The door banging open whipped their heads around.
"Rand!" Bode exclaimed. "This man is saying awful things about you." "He says you're the dragon reborn," Lorraine spluttered.
The girls in the rest of the room apparently had not heard. They gasped.
"I am," Rand said wearily.
Lorraine sniffed and folded her arms beneath her breasts.
"As soon as I saw that coat, I knew you had gotten a big head running off with an Aes Sedai the way you did. I knew it before you talked so disrespectfully to Ilana Sedai and Varen Sedai, but I didn't know you had become a stone-blind jackfool."
Bode's laugh was more appalled than amused.
"You shouldn't say such a thing even as a joke, Rand. Tam raised you better than that. You're Randall Thor. Now stop this foolishness."
Randall Thor. That was his name, but he hardly knew who he was. Tamal Thor had raised him, but his father had been an Aiel chief, now long dead. His mother had been a maiden, but not Aiel. That was as much as he really knew of who he was. Sidene still filled him. Gently he wrapped Bode and Lorene in flows of air and lifted them until their shoes dangled a foot above the floor.
"I am the dragon reborn. Denying won't change it. Wishing won't change it. I'm not the man you knew back in Emmons Field. Do you understand now? Do you?"
He realized he was shouting and clamped his mouth shut. His stomach was lead and he was trembling. Why had Alana done what she did? What Aes Sedai scheme was hatching behind that pretty face? Trust none of them, Moraine had said. A hand touched his arm, and his head jerked around.
Please let them down, Alana said. Please. They are frightened.
They were more than frightened. Lorene's face seemed drained of blood, and her mouth gaped as wide as it would go, as if she wanted to scream and had forgotten how. Bode was sobbing so hard she quivered. They were not the only ones. The rest of the Two Rivers girls had huddled together as far from him as they could get, and most of them were crying too. The serving maids were in that tight cluster as well, weeping as hard as anyone else. The innkeeper had sagged to his knees, goggle-eyed and gurgling wordlessly. Rand eased the two girls back down and hastily let go of Sidene.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
As soon as they could move, Bode and Lorene fled to join the other girls, clutching one another.
Bode, Lorene, I'm sorry. I won't hurt you, I promise.
They did not look at him. None of them did. Sulin was certainly looking at him, and the rest of the maidens, too. Blank-faced, flat-eyed, disapproving stares.
What's done is done, Bashir said, setting down his mug. Who knows? Perhaps it's for the best.
Rand nodded slowly. It probably was. Best that they wanted to stay clear of him.
Best for them.
He just wished he could have talked a little while longer about home. A little while longer with them seeing only Rand Althor. His knees still wobbled from the bonding, but once he began moving, he did not stop until he was back in Jaden's saddle. Best that they were afraid of him. Best that he forgot the Two Rivers. He wondered whether that mountain ever got lighter for a time, or only kept on getting heavier.